Okay, good evening. We're continuing the series of the Talmud. Today it's number 34. Last week we finished Masechet Sota, describing the signs that will take place before the arrival of the Mashiach. Before the Mashiach will arrive, what is going to happen in the world, and we prove that the list of all the things that the Gemara speaks about, everything happened in our time, which actually 50 years ago, none of it took place. So in the last 50 years, things that nobody could imagine in the time of the Gemara, they already happening, so we should expect it to happen any minute. Now today we're starting Masechet Gittin. The Gemara brings a story. At the time that the second temple was destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan was the president. Rabbi Yochanan was the president of Israel. And the Romans made an ambush around Jerusalem for 3 years. Nobody comes in and out for 3 years. No food going in. Nobody comes in and out. The only thing is, when someone died in Jerusalem, they allowed the body to go out, because they didn't bury anyone in Jerusalem because of the Kohanim, Bet HaMikdash, and the whole thing. You know, they're not putting any graves in a place when all the Kohanim goes, you know, because the Kohen cannot go over a grave or in a cemetery for the impurity. So they just smuggle the bodies out of the wall, and they bury it out of the wall of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was all surrounded with a wall. That's what it is. Now, the Gemara says that the Romans were waiting for the Jews to surrender. You know, when you were choked, how long you can survive? 1 month, 2 months, there's no more food. Why to fight? Why to get killed? Let's just choke them. Nobody comes in and out from the wall. Finished. The Jews wanted to surrender. Why? The Jews cannot fight against the biggest empire in the world with such a massive army that came all the way from Rome, you know, to fight in Israel. They're not going to leave us alone. Now remember, there's no airplanes. There's no cars, no trains. It's horses. That's the transportation. Horses. That's what they use. You know, it can come with boats also, but still, this is how it was. The Gemara said the Jews wanted to surrender, but the mafia, the gangsters of the Jews, were standing inside the wall, from the inside side of the wall. And they're not letting the Jews go to surrender to the Romans. This is how it's been taking place for 3 years. The Jews want to go to surrender. They say, no, we won't surrender. Any Jew wants to go out, they stand over there, they don't let them. Who was in charge of this gangster, the group that, you know, that making problems? His name was Abba Sikra. Abba Sikra is the son of Rabbi Yochanan's sister, which means Rabbi Yochanan, the president of Israel, the holy Rabbi Yochanan, is his uncle. So, one time his uncle calling him, he said, Ad matai avidetu achi? Until when you're going to do what you're doing? How long? He says, give me a way to go and surrender to the Romans before it's going to be a bloodshed here. So he said to him, it's basically not my call, even though I'm in charge. If I go tell my soldiers, that I'm letting you go surrender, it will be my end. So we have to do it in a clever way. What's going to be, the Gemara says, he says to him, pretend that you died. You're an old man. Make a rumor. Tell some of your students to go out, to cry, to pretend that you died. Put some dead rats in your bed when you cover. Put some dead animal that it will smell, you know, after a few hours. And now it's going to be very bad smell. And your people should go and say that you died, and everybody is going to start arranging your funeral. And the rule is that we don't bury inside Jerusalem, so we're going to send you out of the wall. Then you get out and you go and surrender. That's the only way. But make sure that only your students will carry your beds, the ones who knows that you're not dead. Why? If somebody else would want to carry the bed, everyone fight who's going to carry the bed. It's a big risk to give respect for a big rabbi. If somebody else will pick up the bed, they will realize that you're not dead. Why? a dead person is heavier than a living person. Why? When a person is alive, the soul is always rising higher and higher, and it goes against gravity, brings the body up. The soul, everything, all the movements that we have, it's the soul. Once the soul leaves the body becomes really few pounds or few kilos heavier. They may suspect, so make sure it's your students. So I will be waiting in the gate, and I will supervise and let you go. That was the plan, that's how they did it. Then when Rabbi Yochanan came, they carry his bed. The soldier says, how do we know it's not pretending? The soldiers. Let's take the swords and stick it a few times in his stomach to make sure that he's really dead. So now Abba Sikra tells them, are you out of your mind? Even the Romans will talk about us forever. We stab the body of our chief rabbi, the president. Come on, there's a limit. So okay, you're right, we're sorry. So let's give him a few smacks to make sure he's dead. So he said, what's the difference? If you smack him, they're going to say, look at these Jews, the chief rabbi, the holiest person in the world is dead, and they're smacking his body. Okay, don't you smell? He said, don't you smell? I'm choking from the smell here. He's probably dead for many hours. It's very hot in Israel. The body smells after a few hours. So they say, okay, let him go. Now he went out. Baruch Hashem is out of the wall now. Out of his wall, he's running right away to the Caesar. This Caesar, it's not the chief Caesar of Rome. Rome occupied almost the whole world. In every place they occupied, they put a supervisor, like a governor. They used to call him a Caesar. Not Caesar salad, Caesar. Caesar is like a Caesar. But every time the king died or something happened, they choose one of the Caesars all over the world, like an election. Like you have many in Congress, right, senators, and every once in a while, one of them becomes the new president, right? Same thing over there. So now it's the Caesar that came to Jerusalem. He's supposedly the most important Caesar out of all the places in the world, because this everybody understands that's the holiest place in the world. If they send him to be in charge of the soldier who come to destroy the Jewish temple, that means he's an important Caesar. So now Rabbi Yochanan come to his office, to his palace over there, and he comes to him and he say to him, Shalom Adoni HaMelech, good day, your majesty, the king. So he told him, now you have to be executed twice. He say, once that you called me the king and you insulted the real king in Rome, I'm not really the king, I'm only the Caesar. So for that, right away, your punishment is death. And if I'm a king in your eyes, how do you make me wait for you here 3 years until you have the nerve to come and surrender? For that, another death you deserve. So Rabbi Yochanan told him, first, you are going to be the king very shortly. So I'm already calling you the king. From out of all the Caesars, you're going to be the new king of Rome. So he said to him, how do you know? He said, we know in our Torah that God always sent goyim, the Gentiles, to make us problems. This is like the police against us, to wake us up to become righteous. But he never put us in the hand of somebody that is not important. Only in the hand of the biggest empires in history and in the hand of the most important person in the world, such as Nebuchadnezzar, Ahasuerus, Pharaoh. That's all history in their time. Remember, this is 2,000 years ago. Pharaoh, it's 1,300 years before that story. Nebuchadnezzar, 600 years before. The Greeks, also a few hundred years before. Ahasuerus, also 400-500 years before. So there are already four chief kings in the world that occupied us. So if you are the one who's going to occupy Israel, there's no question, you're just about to be a king. And the reason I didn't come, because the gangster didn't let me. There's a gangster, they stand over there. If I try to come out, they'll kill me. They don't care. They stand over there, and he told them how he came out with this trick. As they speak, a soldier just entered, breaking news. Sir, you were called, the king died in Rome, you are called to be the new king, as they speak. Now this king went out of his mind. Look at this Jew. 3 years I'm waiting for him to come. 10 minutes he's sitting by me, already they're calling me to be the king of Rome. He was very impressed. The thing is that when he came to give him the message, he was wearing his shoes. One shoe he put on, and now he was trying to put the second shoe after he heard the good news. And the second shoe would not fit. It's too small. So how can it be? Every day I wear these shoes. And I had a problem. All of a sudden, this shoe is not coming on. So he said to him, Rabbi Yochanan, the reason it's not fitting your feet is because when a person hears a message, news that he's happy about, it makes his bones wider. And it makes the feet also bigger. That's why right now your shoe cannot go on your feet. You want it to fit? All these soldiers over here, if you have one of them that you hate, go and look at him for a few seconds, and then the shoe will go on your feet. He went again next to one of the soldiers that he cannot stand. And a minute later, the shoe went on. Now he was very impressed. Wow. Of course, it's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all Hashem running the show. But he said, wow, I'm really impressed from you. So he says to him, since you, the one who gave me the news before even the soldier arrived, I have to do something for you. So I'm going to give you, make any request that you want from me and I will fulfill your request. That reminds me about these jokes that they're telling about the genies. You know the genies in a bottle? One guy, they make jokes in Israel. You know, so one guy, it was a Kurdish guy. You know, he never went to school. His head is empty from knowledge. He walks in the desert and he saw a bottle. He was thirsty, so he opened up the bottle, the genie came out. So he said to the genie, wow, what a surprise. So the genie say, wow, you know how many years I'm locked in this bottle? Now, since you made me come out, you will tell me anything you want and I'll do it for you. Any request you want. So this Kurdish guy is thinking for himself. He said, I'll tell you what. I want you to build me a bridge all the way from here, all the way to Kurdistan. It's next to Iraq there. All the way that I can walk there and I don't have to bother in a desert, in a water, like this, straight bridge all the way from here to Kurdistan. So the genie told them, hey, you have to be realistic. I got to move buildings. I have to move the oceans. And it's a disaster. It's going to affect the life of thousands of people. Don't you have something more realistic? He told him, okay, you're right. Just make my son a lawyer. So the genie told him, tell me, when I build you the bridge, do you want also lights on the bridge? To make your son a lawyer, it's harder. You know, like you guys are empty-minded. That's the joke. So now he told him, since you gave me the good news, any request you have, I will fulfill. Now, Rabbi Yochanan could have told him, don't destroy the temple. But he knew it's not going to happen. Why? The whole reason they came all the way here with a massive army and they're waiting for 3 years is just for that day. Just because I gave him a good news, he probably won't agree and then I would lose my chance. So maybe I should make small requests like this, at least in the future we will have salvation. So he told him 3 small requests, small but very big. First request, he told him, I want you to promise me not to touch the family of Rabban Gamliel. There was Rabban Gamliel, his son Rabbi Shimon, then Rabban Gamliel, then Rabbi Shimon. That's, who are they? The grandchildren of King David. They are from the family of King David. He thought, the Roman, Goy, he thought probably it's his family, his friends. So he doesn't want me to kill his family. So he agreed right away. But Rabbi Yochanan was thinking, if he killed his family, the Mashiach will never come. So this is the future of the, without Mashiach, what are we going to do? So don't touch this family. So he agreed. Then he said to him, there is a yeshiva, a Jewish yeshiva, of the rabbis that are learning in the city of Yavne. Yavne. He used to be in Jerusalem. The Sanhedrin, 71 chief rabbis, they were sitting inside the temple. When? Where? They were sitting right next to the gold altar. There's a big mizbeach in the Bet HaMikdash. Next room, it was Lishkat HaGazit. There's a special place. There's a special place who called Lishkat HaGazit. What's so special about this place? All the Chachamim used to sit there. And making laws, judging life and death, etc., etc. One time, the Chachamim started to see that there is too many wicked people that deserve to be killed. And they didn't want to kill the people. The rabbis were not happy to rule executions for Jewish people. So they decided to move to Yavne. Why? In Yavne, even if they want, they cannot kill anyone. What's the difference? Because the Torah says when you judge a Jew and his verdict is execution, me'et mizbachi tikachen ulamut. You take him to his execution directly from my altar, from the mizbeach. Which means, we learn from here, that the court has to be right next to the altar. Because the Torah say, when you rule death, you have to take them directly from the altar. Don't even hesitate. Don't wait an hour or two. Don't let them go say goodbye, meet their lawyer to arrange the will, nothing. As your rule is death, you take them directly from the altar into the execution. So the rabbis found a trick. Let's move Sanhedrin to a different city. It won't be next to the altar. And then we're not going to be able to take them directly from the altar to the dead because the altar is 60 miles away. And like this, they didn't kill anyone. In the meantime, the Romans came. Now they're sitting in Yavne. This Roman, he didn't know who these rabbis are because they're sitting in Yavne. So he told him, I want you not to touch these rabbis. Don't kill them. That yeshiva, don't touch them. Let them sit and learn Torah. He said, okay, you want them to learn? Let them learn. He doesn't know this is Sanhedrin. And I have one more tiny request. What is it? I have a friend. His name is Rabbi Tzadok. He's been fasting for 3 years. His stomach became like a paper. That's it. He cannot eat anything. Another few days, he'll die. You have your doctors that they know how to heal stomachs. They have special weed, they grind it, all kinds of things, slowly, slowly. Let your doctor take care of him until he comes back to normal. Who was this Rabbi Tzadok? Thanks to him, he was such a righteous person. He was fasting and praying to Hashem that the Romans will not enter Israel. For thanks to him, for 3 years, the decree was delayed. Thanks to him, Rabbi Tzadok. He knew thanks to him we live. He's a very, very holy person. For 3 years he was fasting. So, you know, obviously fasting, obviously he was eating something, but fasting probably all day. Bottom line, he said, okay, my doctor, you tell them who this person is, they'll take care of him. Then Rabbi Akiva was, like I always say, was the greatest Jew ever lived. Even though he started his religion in age 40, he died in 120. But he became the biggest rabbi in history, the biggest. Rabbi Akiva said, what kind of mistake Rabbi Yochanan made? He had an opportunity, to ask them not to touch the holy temple. And instead of that, what is he asking for? Instead of that, he's asking not to touch Rabbi Tzadok, not to touch Rabbi Yochanan. You should have told them, go back to Rome. But then the answer is, who was right? Rabbi Yochanan was right. Because if he would ask them, go back to Rome, they'll tell you, just get out of here. Your request is over and finished. Sometimes you have to know what to ask. You ask the wrong question, you lose your chance. One guy called up a lawyer. He told him, Mr. Attorney, I wanted to hire you for for a trial that I have, but I want to just clarify one thing. I was told that you charge $300 for three questions. Is it possible? So the lawyer told him yes. He said, don't you think it's expensive? He said, you have one question left. That's how it is. As soon as you call, they time. If the lawyer sneezes, 3 seconds, you pay for it. Yes, later, yes. All right, let's move on. So this Gemara, it's the first story in Masechet Gittin. Bottom line, the Gemara said that he was clever. He got three important things out of them, and if he would go for the Beit HaMikdash, he would left with nothing. The Gemara continued, Titus HaRasha, once he went, they sent somebody else. Who? Titus. Titus was a very wicked person. He comes now to destroy Beit HaMikdash. He curses Hashem. He does all kinds of bad things. Finally, when they came and they broke into Beit HaMikdash, what did he do? He took a prostitute woman and entered inside Kodesh HaKodashim. That place where the big Kohen, Kohen Gadol, is praying to Hashem once a year in Yom Kippur. Only the Kohen Gadol allowed to enter, only for a few minutes. Right there, in the holiest square in the whole world, that's when he went to make the war scene. And there was the Sifre Torah over there. He took a Sefer Torah, he opened the Sefer Torah, and he made his prostitute sleep on the Sefer Torah while he was making the scene. And not only that, later he took his sword and started to make holes in the Sefer Torah, and Hashem made a miracle that blood were coming out, drops of blood dripping from the Sefer Torah. And he was happy. He said, I killed their God. They don't understand, these people. They're all worshipping idols. For him, that was their God, the Sefer Torah. You see, the Jews bow down to it, they kiss it. Oh, that's their idol. That's how they think. Let's destroy it. So, then after that, they took all the treasure, all the gold, everything in Beit HaMikdash. They put everything in a very big blanket. They fold it and they carry it. They took the big menorah and they went to Rome. If you ever go to Rome, you see over there they have a big gate and they have a picture over there of the slaves are carrying the treasures of Beit HaMikdash. You see they're holding the menorah. And that's what happened 2,000 years ago. So, no, they have it in Rome. It's called Titus. Okay, anyway, so this is it. So now, he thought, God forbid, he killed God. That's what he thought. Now he's going in the boat. The boat is shaking. A big storm in the ocean. I say, I thought I killed their God. I see that he's still alive. Why? I know from history that his strength is always in the water. Pharaoh, he drowned in the water. Every war, Sisra, with his big, they all died in the water. Everyone who went against his nation, in the end, he drowned them in the water. So now that's what he's going to do to me. If you have the God of the Jews, to fight with me when I arrive to the land, then we'll see if you're really a hero. Over here, it's your territory. Let's see if you can fight against me when I get to the beach. Then the Gemara say, Yatzta bat kol, an echo in heaven said, wicked, the son of a wicked, filthy person. Ben bno shel Esav ha-rasha, you come from Esav, the wicked Esav. I have a very small creature in my world. Nobody pays attention to it. What is it? Mosquito. Well, anyone cares? There's one more mosquito, one less mosquito. I will destroy you with the smallest and less important out of anything creature in the world. He will destroy you. I don't need to do anything to you. What's going to happen? This mosquito enter his nose. And he was breathing, and he went right in. He went into the system, slowly, slowly, until he got into the brain. Because, you know, the nostrils are very, very long. If you ever break your nose, I hope it never happened to you, one of the things that after they fix the nose, they stick a bandage inside the nose. You are numb. You sleep. You don't feel it. Otherwise, forget it. You won't be able to take the pain. And then the pain is 3 weeks later when they remove the cast or whatever you have on your nose. Now they have to pull it out. I don't want to tell you the pain. You know. So I broke my nose twice. First time I didn't take care of it. Because in Israel, you know, it's like, you know. But over here, when it happens over here, the doctors don't let you go. No, they do it. I have to do it. So I was pulling and pulling. It's already 3 feet. How did it enter the nose? It goes, it's flexible. It goes all over. It's very long, the nose. Eventually, it connects to the brain somehow. Connects because the oxygen goes into the brain. The brain receives oxygen all the time. So this mosquito now begins to suck his blood from his brain. Why mosquito? Why? There's all kinds of other flies. Why Hashem picked up mosquito? What's special about mosquito? Do you know? Who knows what's special? Mosquito is the only thing in a creation. The only thing in a creation that only suck in but doesn't have any food comes out. No exits. No bathroom. Doesn't have to sit in a bathroom for an hour. Nothing. Why? Only sucking blood and growing until he gets to a certain size and he dies. Doesn't need to go to the bathroom. You got it? So mosquito, he was sucking and sucking and sucking from his blood. He became almost the size of the Gemara said when they open up his brain in the end, the mosquito is the size of a small bird. That's how big he became. He just literally ate his whole brain. But now he hears the mosquito in his head. Imagine all day you feel inside your head. It's killing you. Drives you crazy. He goes like this. Nothing happened. Then one time he walks in the street. He walked in a place in a market. People are working. So he saw people banging with a hammer, fixing shoes. The shoemakers. They bang, boom, boom, boom. When he heard the noises of the hammer, the mosquito stopped. The noise, for a minute, he hear boom, 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 no noise. He said, wow, I'm lucky. I found the cure for my problem. What is it? I'm going to hire these 5 guys. All day they sit by my roof and bang. Better to hear the banging than this annoying noise. So he told them, that's it, you're not working here anymore. Come with me to my palace. He took him there. All day they sit and bang. Now one of them was a Jew. 4 goyim, 1 Jew. In the end of the day, they come to get their daily salary. So he give the goyim, 4 of them he paid them. The Jew goes, what about my money? He say, you have the nerve. Not only you sit here for 10 hours enjoying my suffering, you want to get paid for it? You want to get paid? You see how I suffer from this mosquito? You want to get paid for it? That's what happened. But after a few days, the mosquito realized that the banging is not finished. So he started again. That's it. He got used to the situation. Like us. First time when we see something, if we see now pink rain, so for one day, we won't go out to the street. We don't know what it is. We never saw. Then second day, third day, then you got to go to work. You have to bring food home. So one brave person will walk with umbrella. Then another person will see him from the window. He goes out. Then after a week, the whole world is walking with umbrellas. Pink rain, no problem. First day, nobody, you know, it's scary. Same thing with mosquito. First day, didn't know what's going on. Second day, third day, it's not going to move now forever. Then he started to move. He saw nothing happen. Oh, he went back to normal, and that's it. Then, until he died, they opened up his brain, and they found inside a size of tzipor dror, mishkal shne slaim, like 2 coins. The weight of it was kind of heavy. And the Gemara said, they're arguing about the size of the bird, if it was like a small dror or like a cheek. In between is a little difference. That's the end of this wicked person who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. You may ask, why Hashem allow him to do what he did. Could have prevented it. The way in the world is בדרך שאדם רוצה ללך מוליכים אותו. When a person choose a negative way, a wicked way, Hashem helps him to go there. It's not blocking his way. Unless if he's going to do something that Hashem is not interested that it will happen in the world. He wants to kill an innocent group of people. And Hashem doesn't want them to die yet. Then he will interfere with his plan. But if, for instance, what a person chooses to do bad, the person that is going to receive it deserves it, then he let him succeed. You know, and this is what happened right here. The Jews had this decree that the temple will be destroyed. What difference does it make if it will be destroyed like this or like this? He stepped the Sefer Torah or he burned the Sefer Torah. It's really no difference. Either way, it makes it not kosher by making holes in it. So bottom line, it had to be in a worse scenario can be described, the worst. And this is what happened. So the Gemara continue. This Titus had a nephew. Nephew, he was the son of his sister. His name was Onkulus. When you open the Torah, the Chumash, every Shabbat, what do you have on the side in Aramaic? Translation, commentaries of Onkulus, a convert, a Jewish convert. He was a Roman. He was a Roman. No. This Onkulus came to convert. So, after his uncle died, Titus, he saw his end, how the mosquito ate his brain. He started to realize this God is paying the Romans back for what they did. Let me go and convert. So he made a seance. He called the spirit of his uncle Titus, you know, like speaking to the spirits. So the world, people are doing it every day in the world, in Israel, everywhere. So he called him up and he asked him, tell me, who is important in heaven? He told him, the Jews, they are important by God. He say, what should I do? Should I convert or should I stay a goy? He told him, the religion is too difficult for you. You won't be able, the way you grew up, to follow these laws. So, what should I do? Go fight against them. At least you'll be successful in this life. Even though it's a short life, their God help people who come to punish them when they deserve the punishment. So at least, you are for my family, you're important in a Roman Empire. So you have a career. That's what he said. So this is, he wasn't sure if to listen to his wicked uncle or not. What happened later? He called up Bilam. He said there was a prophet of the Gentiles, of the Goyim, Bilam, in the time of Moshe and Pharaoh and all this. So Bilam, let me call his spirit. He brought the spirit of Bilam. First he asked Titus, what's the punishment you got for what you did to the Jews? He asked him. So he say, every day I get burned and they take my ashes and they spread it in 7 different oceans, lakes, rivers, whatever it is. And then they collect all the ashes together, putting me back into place and burn me again. And that's like this. That's my suffering. And there's many stupid people in the world that they write in their will that when they die, they should incriminate them. That's the word, crimination. Cremate. Huh? Cremate. Sounds like cream. It's the opposite of cream. Anyway, so they want, some of them, they tell their children, take my ashes and throw it in the backyard. Some of them say, give it to the dog. Give it to the fish. Some of them put me in a jar in your bedroom that you always think about me. All kinds of stupid people. And the bottom line, if they only knew Gemara, they knew that they requested one of the worst punishments for themselves, because as long as the body was not buried, the soul have no rest. One of the things that is the suffering of the soul after the death is that the body is finished in a grave, and that's it, the worms eat everything. Nothing have left from the body, and the soul gets released from the suffering of being connected to the grave, to the body.
Even non-Jews,
they have a reward and punishment when they die. We spoke about it many times. So now he called up Bilam. He said to Bilam, "Who is important up there?" He told him the Jews.
He says, what should I do? Should I stick to them and convert or not? He said, no, don't be nice to them. Don't ask for their peace or any good for them your entire life. Why? Same idea like Titus. Nothing is different. So he said to him, what punishment you got? You went against the Jews in your life. He told him, they put me inside a pool. But not a pool, Sheraton, Hilton, and all this. A pool that is full of sperm for the sin he used to do with his donkey. He was sleeping with his own animal. That's Bilam, like the Torah says. The Torah says he was such a filthy person. And that's what is punishment, measure for measure. Everything you do, that's what you get. No, so he got rid of this Bilam. Now he say, I got to call someone else to make sure. Let's see. I still have doubts. Who did he call? JC. JC comes. Now, what's the difference between both of them to JC? JC died as a Jew. He was Jewish. He died as a Jew. So now he called up JC. He said to JC, tell me, what should I do? Should I convert or should I go against the Jews? He said, Tovatam Drosh. Always ask for good for them. Don't ever do anything bad to them. Everyone who touched them is like touching against God. So he told him, you left the religion. You died wicked. What is your punishment? He told him, I am inside a boiling bathroom. He said, why? Bilam, I understand. He's seen what was his sin. They gave him the same punishment. Titus, he burned the Beit HaMikdash. They burn him. So it's measure for measure. But you, why bathroom? He say, Kol ha-mal'ig al divrei chachamim nidon betzo'ar otachat. Everyone who make fun at the holy rabbis, disrespect them, talk to them not nice, speak lashon hara about them, don't listen to their instruction, make fun of what they say, have doubts about what they say in the name of the Torah. Somebody like this, his punishment is where I am. And that's, by the way, the seventh place in hell. It's called Tachtit Haaretz, Tzoarot, a horrible place. So he told him, so the Gemara says, come and learn what's the difference between the wicked Goyim to the wicked Jews. That the wicked Goyim, they already get their punishments in the afterlife, and they still tell him, no, don't convert, go against them. At least you enjoy this life. And JC, he told him, no, yes, convert, don't fight against them, don't do anything against them. You understand the difference? He, at least, after his death, he told him to do the right thing. By the way, you should know, many Goyim don't know it, that according to JC, there is not even one righteous Christian in the world, not even the Pope. Why? If JC is their son of God, and he gave them the New Testament, which means he didn't give it to them. It was written between 70 and 300 years after his death. But in his name, he is the main actor in the New Testament. It's all about him, around him, the expectation for him to come back and save the world, etc., etc. JC say, in the book of Matthew 5:17-19, that everyone, he did not come to change one letter from the Torah, not even a drop of a letter, nothing. Everything will remain forever. If anyone contradict one letter in the Torah, one word in the Torah will be cursed by God. That's, now comes the question. How 1.5 billion or 2 billion people that follow this book, they do everything besides the most important thing. He told them, no one is allowed to change from these commandments. You must keep. And another place he say, you must listen to the rabbis because they sit on the chair of Moses and they continue the Torah. They sit on the chair of Moshe. You must listen to them. Yet he himself went against the rabbi in the end of his life. But he, that's what they write, at least in their books. So based on that, how can it be a righteous Christian? Even if it was true, not one of them is listening to their hero. Imagine we follow the Torah that Hashem gave us through Moshe. And we would not listen to one word of what Moshe said.
Just, you know, to have a picture on the wall. Why you got the Torah? To hang it in my bedroom as a memory. Well, what about the instruction? Not for me. That's like the Israeli, some of them. Ani dati balev. I'm religious in my heart. He didn't read Parashat Bechukotai 2 days ago. Im Bechukotai telechu, if you follow my laws, ve'et mitzvotai tishmoru, and you keep my commandments, va'asitem otam, and you do it. Why you do it? You told me follow my ways and keep my commandments. Why have to repeat again and do it? Which means to do, not to talk, and to say I'm religious in my heart. That's nothing. I once said, it's like a person that, I don't know, NBC News gave him $10 million to write his life story, and he has a due date that by that date he has to send it in because they have to publish it. There's a contract. He's working for a year. All year he's typing, 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 typing. What happened in the end? 2 hours before the due date, he's supposed to send it. So he forgot to send, to press send. He didn't press send. The time went by. They got angry. They canceled the contract. He didn't get a penny. That's like a person learn, comes to lecture, learns. In the end, he doesn't do anything. What's the purpose of learning? To press send, my friend. You want to send mitzvot to Olam Haba. You do everything, it's a demo? Imagine you go to a firm to invest in a stock market. They give you a computer. They say, okay, sir, give us your money. They put it. Okay, you have $10 million. Now, here, this is do this. They give you instructions. You sit there for a month. Everything you buy go up like crazy. Now it shows you have in your account already $100 million in 1 month. It started with 10, now you have 100. In the end of the month, you come and say to your boss, okay, I think I should retire. I don't need more than 100 million. So what do you mean 100 million? There was only demo. Yeah, it's not real money. We're just training you. What? What that? Now if it's going to be real, you lose. Many of the people who go to the stock market, when it's demo, they make. Once it becomes real, after a month of making, 1 week, they lose all their money, unfortunately. All right, so let's move on. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, come and learn. Rabbi Elazar say, come and learn how strong is the power of the embarrassment. Why? Hashem, God, help Bar Kamtza. You know the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. One guy made a party and he invited a person called Kamtza. By mistake, they called Bar Kamtza, his son. And his son was his biggest enemy. The person who was making a party, by mistake, they invited his biggest enemy, a person he wants to kill. So he comes to this person, he says, you have the nerve to come to my party and sit in my dining room? So he told him, please, I was surprised why you invited me. I thought maybe you want to make peace. But please, don't embarrass me in front of everyone. I'll pay you for my meal. Don't worry. Tell me how much my food cost you. I'll leave money before I leave. He said, no, my friend. Get up in front of everyone. Get out of here. I don't want to see you. He said to him, listen, I tell you what. I'll pay for the entire party. Don't throw me out. It's a big embarrassment here. He told him, get up. He began to scream. Everyone looks. So he said to him, listen, why are you doing all this? In the end, he picked him up and kicked him out of the door. So now this Bar Kamtza got very insulted. What got him angry the most was that there was important rabbis sitting in that party. Not one of them got up to protect his dignity, his embarrassment. The rabbis were sitting. Nobody made a beep while he's throwing me out of his home. He said, I'm going to teach them a lesson. He went to the Romans. He told them, listen, I want to tell you something about the Jews that will get you very angry. What? If you bring a sacrifice, he said to the king, you, the king of the world, if you give me a sacrifice and I'm going to take it to the Jews to sacrifice it in the temple for you, you'll see that they won't agree because it came from you. So they gave him a goat. He cut his lip with a razor. Now it's a defect. If it's a defect, you cannot sacrifice a defected animal. So he brought it to the rabbi. They look at it. They say, you know, it says, what are we going to do? Are we going to send it back? And like this, they get very angry and who knows what's going to happen. Or we sacrifice it and we go against God. Bottom line, they didn't sacrifice it. And that was the destruction of Jerusalem. For an argument between two Jews with their ego of the owner of that party, nobody made a beep. From the embarrassment, embarrassing a Jew, and he went and told the Goyim, there was the destruction of the temple, the destruction of Israel came. Don't think that it's history. It happens every day. You know how many people go to the FBI and tell them about other people? Did you hear about what happened in the Syrian community a year ago? One person was telling many of them into the authorities. He did it because he got caught and he wanted to get a discount on his years in jail. The more Jews he's going to turn in, the less he's going to sit in jail. And even though he knew the law that a Jew who turns Jews into the authority has no share to the world to come, and it's called Moser, it's a very big sin, the worst. Somebody like this cannot even enter the shul to pray with the Jews. They have to throw him out. And his children is a disaster. He ended up selling all his friends from his community, uncles, the chief rabbi of the Syrian community, everyone into the hand of the FBI. Just that he will sit last years in prison. And not only that, he was going to use as a trap to make more rabbis fall into that trap that they'll go to jail with him. For instance, he went to one of the rabbis, the son of Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, that was visiting here in New York that week. He told him, I have a check, $20,000+. I want you to do me a favor. Please cash the check for me and keep, I don't know, 5%, 10%. Cash it for me. Like it's donation to your congregation. And he told him, I'm not doing things like this. He didn't know he's working for the FBI. He didn't know. So he said, no, I'm not doing it. And everything is wired. He's recording everything. And they're all sitting in the car listening to the whole conversation. I said, no, I'm not doing things like this. In the end, he didn't agree. But it didn't help him. He had to escape America, and what I heard, he cannot ever come back here. If he comes back here, they'll catch him in the airport. Now, think about the damage. He used to come and collect a lot of money. He has big yeshivot in Israel. He cannot come here anymore. Everything, all the suffering of all the people who learned Torah, now they don't get enough money or they don't get it all. Maybe the yeshiva became smaller, less Torah. It's all his fault. That's called Moser. You understand what's going on here? The only time a Jew is allowed to turn another Jew into the authorities is if he threatens his life. And obviously the Jewish community cannot protect him. They're not equipped with weapon or anything to. So then he can tell the police, this guy is trying to kill me. So yeah, he has the right, pikuach nefesh, to tell about him. Or if it's a person who goes and rape people from the community, rape physically, or rape means robbing, stealing money, giving forged checks, stealing from innocent people, and is going one after the other in hitting another victim and another one, there's no other way to stop him, that's what you have to do. But other than that, just because you don't like him, to tell about him, he didn't pay enough taxes, or, you know, all kinds of things like this, there's no permission. So let's move on. The Gemara says, one guy and a girl got engaged, young. And they captured by the Romans. They put handcuffs on them. You know, so they told them, what are you to each other? They told them, we got engaged. So, we're going to make you a wedding now. They got them married. But there was no rabbi to write ketubah. She didn't give her ketubah. And they put them in jail, in the same room. They say, okay, you're husband and wife, you live in the same room. And she told him, please don't touch me, because we never completed the wedding. We never got the ketubah. We didn't do it the right way. And there were many years in a room, and he never touched her once. Think about it. Teenage, the love of his life. He married her. Since he never gave her ketubah, there's no paper, nobody to write ketubah. He was with her for years in a room and never touched her. You understand what kind of people we had in the world?
אמרה להם, you know, when he died, she said, make a special eulogy to my husband, that he's greater than Joseph in the Torah. Yosef was in a palace with Eshet Potiphar, but for a short period of time, not for so many years. And Yosef knew she's a Goya, he's not allowed to touch her. But he was allowed to touch me. It's not that we got married. It's not that we didn't get married. There was just a technical problem in a marriage. But it wouldn't be seen from the Torah. If a person, for instance, didn't write Ketubah, technically from the Torah, it's his wife. That's it. She needs a get. If she wants to get divorced, he has to write her a get. She said, Yosef was chadashata. It was only one short period of time. But him every day for years. You know, that reminds me about a story. In Brighton Beach, there was a person who came from Russia, and he joined a local minyan there. He was sitting in a corner for a few years, coming to shul, praying and going home. He's not socializing with anyone. He doesn't talk. Nothing like that. After a few years, one day he passed away. So his wife asking the rabbi, Rabbi, my husband passed away. Can you get 10 people at least to come tomorrow morning to the funeral that we can say Kaddish for him? We don't have children. First time the rabbi knew about his private life. He wasn't talking. So the rabbi told him, okay, I'm going to make a few phone calls to the people of the community and ask them to come. You know, people working, let's hope that they'll agree to come. Since this was a person that, you know, nobody felt close to because he wasn't talking too much, only 7 people showed up. The rabbi and 6 more guys from the congregation. There's not enough to say Kaddish. Only 7 men and the wife. Nobody else. So the rabbi said to the wife, I have to say eulogy for him, but I have a problem. I do not know anything about him. I can only say that he was coming and praying. He was quiet. Every day he came to pray, every Shabbat. And that's all I can say. Maybe you should say a few words, even though it's not modest that a woman will stand by the crowd and talk. But since it's your husband and there's nobody else here, why don't you say something for him? So she got up, she said, okay. She said, you are probably wondering how come old people like us that we married for so many years don't have any children. So when we lived in Russia, we lived in an old primitive village, very far away from the big cities. There was no mikveh over there. No mikveh. I couldn't go to the mikveh. There was no mikveh. So after we got married, after I got my first period, you know, obviously she was nida all the time, there was no place for me to go. No Jewish me, no mikveh over there, no Jewish community, nothing. So we were so poor, we couldn't afford to move out of there. So all these years we were married in the same house, and my husband never touched me even once until we came here to America. I went to the mikveh, and then we started to live together, physically. But I was too late already. I was in my 40s, and I never got pregnant. And that's the end of us. You see, we don't have children. He never agreed to make a scene with me because I wasn't pure. I couldn't go to the mikveh. So the rabbi started to cry. He said to them, now I understand why there's only 7 people here. Nobody in this world has the merit to stand next to this righteous person in his funeral. Nobody has this merit. To participate in such funeral, you need a special merit. If every one of you should feel lucky that he had the merit to participate in a funeral of such a person in our century, in the 20th century, it's not stories from the Torah, Yosef HaTzadik. I don't know if you remember, but a year ago I told a story that a person called me from one state in America somewhere, not New York, called me up. He's telling me, I just listened to your Peace in the Family lecture and I feel horrible. I say, why? He said, well, I just realized maybe I'm disrespecting my wife. I'm not fulfilling my obligations. Maybe I'm making sins.
I say, what's the problem? What are you talking about? He say, you know, you say this, you say that, this, and now, you know, I'm not so nice to her and that. So he begins to say, you know, but the only reason I did it because listen to the story. My wife never let me touch her. So I said, how many years you married? More than 20 years. What do you mean she never let you touch her? You live in the same house? I say, yes, same house, same room, everything same. So I said to him, how long it's been going on like this? So he told me from the night of the wedding, we were once together, one time, and that's it. After that, I never ever able to touch her, and she never agreed. But I have 3 children. So I say to myself, okay, I have 3 children. So I ask him, how do you have 3 children? He said, all artificially. She didn't agree that I'll be with her. It was in a, you know, by the doctors, the transplant. They take the sperm, and that's how they did it. Fertilized the egg, planted in. So I told him, your wife doesn't know she's making you make so many horrible sins, and it's only her responsibility. Didn't she understand what marriage is all about? A part of the marriage, she has to be available for her husband. What's going on here? I'm asking him. He said, yeah, I know, but because of that, maybe I didn't give her enough of respect. I said to him, I don't understand. Why you agreed to be married for so many years, knowing it's making you making so many sins? Who say you allow to be with a woman next to you 20 years in a room and she makes you make sins? He said, no, God forbid, I never made a sin. So I told him, you never went to make a sin? He said, no. I say, you know, but maybe you wasted seed or something like that. He say, no, Baruch Hashem, I'm very careful with that. I didn't even do it once. He say to me on the phone. Now he's asking me for bracha. I felt, I didn't know where to hide. Talking to him, this is engraved in my memory for a million years. You ask me in a million years, this conversation never ever leave my mind. I'm remembering sitting on my bed, talking to him on the phone, sitting like this, and I'm thinking to myself, well, is this a dream or it's real? Then I told him, you're asking me for a bracha? I have to come kiss your feet. You are the holiest person in this place. You're bigger, you're greater than Yaakov Avinu. The Gemara says Yaakov Avinu, first time he was with his wife, age 86, Reuven. Reuven, his first son, is the first time was with a woman. All his 86 years, never made a sin, Yaakov. And it's in the Torah. The Torah says, Reuven reshit oni. The first seed that came out of Yaakov's body, it was his first son, Reuven, when he was 86 years old. It's in the Torah. But there's only one difference. In the generation of Yaakov, he didn't have what you have on the streets. You didn't have internet, television, women forget to get dressed. They come, you go to work, the streets became the beach. Yaakov didn't have it. Women were covered from head to toe. You didn't see an object. It was everyone modest, even the goyim. So it's a different world. Plus, Yaakov speaking to Hashem, it's not the same comparison. This is greater. I couldn't believe it. I'm telling you, a shock. It's not, it's in our days, person like this. Not a big rabbi, not the Rosh Yeshiva, not the Baba Sali. How to believe. Anyway, before we finish, we have 10 minutes. So, the Gemara says, like this. They used to have the currency, like today, a dollar worth 3.5 shekel. So it used to be 1 to 40, the currency. Dinar equal 140 modiot. Then it went down to 39. Means you lost the value of the money is going down. Like in America, every week, the value of the dollar goes down. Who knows, maybe in a year, if you go to Europe and you want to buy a can of Coca-Cola, it will cost you $100. Not a joke. It's not a joke. That's what happened to Russia. They went to sleep, $1 was worth 5 rubles, which means a Russian that works and makes 20 rubles an hour,
could buy 4 bottles of Coca-Cola after 1 hour of work. He got up in the morning, it became 1 to 500. He cannot buy 1 sip of Coca-Cola now for 1 hour of work. There was 4 big bottles. Now, finished. Yeah, that's what happened. It can happen here, but the dollar loses value. Yeah, you know that in Utah, any moment they're going to change the currency in Utah, you know. No more dollars accepted. Gold.
South Carolina, they want to
see. Many states. Once one state will do it, everyone will do it. They will make gold. Why? Gold always keeps its value. Papers that the government print nonstop continue to... The government make people who have money and save money, the government destroy them. Why? By printing so much money and give it to the poor people, it makes the value of the money going lower and lower and lower. So our people who save 30 years enough to buy a house, now they cannot buy a bathroom in a house. It doesn't matter. The money lost its value. No value. Maybe in America you can still buy something, but when as soon as you go out of the United States, you cannot buy anything with your money. It's funny, you know. Like you go, let's see here, you can buy, a nice suit. You go with the same money, you cannot buy a gum with this. Because the money lost, you know. All. So today, people do not look at it as a punishment from God. Because people live, everything is coincidence. This is also coincidence. Nature, Rabbi. The currency is moving. It's the economy. But in the old days, everybody knew if our currency lost 1% of the value, God is punishing us for something. And everybody started to argue, what is it? Let's find out that we correct it. So they started to check. And they found a father and a son that had relation with an engaged woman. When? On Yom Kippur. Such a sin. They brought him to the court and stoned them to death. An hour after, the value of the coin went right back up to 40. Now remember, the value was 40 for many, many years. It never went up or down. 1 to 40. All of a sudden, one day, it went down to 39. Everyone's asking, what's going on? How can it be? A crash in the value of the currency? It never happened before. After they found out what happened, an hour later, it went right back up. Ma'aseh be'adam echad, one person, natan enough be'ishto legarsha. He decided to give a get to his wife to get divorced. But her ketubah was too much money. When people get married, they're excited. They write big amounts in a ketubah. Sometimes you gotta pay it. So now he's stuck with her. Cannot divorce her. Well, he's gonna have to give her a lot of money. What did he do? He went and brought all his relatives, friends, and gave them a lot of food and lots of alcohol to drink. And they all became drunk. And he made them all sleep on the bed. And then he took the white of the egg, and put it all over the bed. And then he brought 2 sober witnesses that he see that all these men are sleeping drunk in his wife's bed. And he showed him, you see what happened? This is how I found the bed of my wife. And then they went to the Beit Din, and there was one old man, a student of Shammai. There's Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, student of Shammai. His name was Baba Ben Buta, very famous name. There's many stories in the Talmud about him. He told them, I suspect that something is not right here. So he said like this, I learned from my rabbi Shammai that there is a difference between sperm to the white of the egg. There's a way to tell it. Today you have laboratory, they have all this, you know, today we advanced. This is 2,000 years ago. What's the difference? The white of the egg, when you put it next to a fire, it changes right away. Its color is, and it becomes very dry and become powder. And the sperm is overcoming the influence of the heat of the fire. Whatever it is, I don't know exactly to describe the symptom in English. And they went and compared, and they exactly as he said. So it was fake. So they brought the father, they brought him to court, and he got whipped
with a whip, and they double his ketubah. Let's say it was 500,000. They say to the wife, for the embarrassment, because you, now it became $1 million. I don't know, she got a punishment here. Who wants to be with a husband like this? If I would be the wife, say, hey, that's the story you made about me. I guess what they mean is they force him to divorce her and give her double. That's what it means. Otherwise, it's a punishment. You're forcing me now to stay with him forever. You made the ketubah $1 million. Now for sure I'll stuck with him. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, 80,000 soldiers came to Beitar in a time when they destroyed it. And they killed men and women and children. So many bodies all over. And there was rivers of blood, rivers. You know how the water, when it's rain, is flowing to the sewer? That's how it was with blood. This is one of the reasons that we have two Be'av, the 15th of Av. It's a special day, right? One is because they made a big party to marry the single guys and the single girls. They used to go. It's like a dating, kosher dating. And many people used to get married. But the other reason is because after 3 years that the bodies were laying in the sun, they didn't let them buried. They didn't allow to bury them. Think about it. The city is full of bodies, piles of bodies on the street. What an epidemic it should have made. You know what it is? If you have a body a month, thousands of bodies on the street, everyone will die from sicknesses, from who knows, germs, viruses, whatever you want to call it. For 3 years, it didn't stink. No smell in the whole city. Those who pass by, nobody allowed to bury. If they catch you burying someone, right away they kill you. But for 3 years, it didn't smell. And then Tu Be'av, they allowed them to start bury them. So that's why it became like a holiday. Why? They were so happy. Finally, a person sees his relative laying there for 3 years on the street, and he cannot do anything about it. You know, there was one woman, not religious, a Holocaust survivor, and she died in Israel a few years ago. And in her funeral, you know, there were one she was buried next, not far away from her. She's here, maybe 20-second walk. There is a grave on the religious side. This is where they buried the non-Shomer Shabbos. There's a fence, and then there is the religious people. There was a very important rabbi that was buried at the same time. So it was hundreds of students reading Kaddish, saying Tehillim. So they saw that this woman didn't have anyone to bury her. Maybe one or two people there came for her. So they all made like a chesed. They came and they started to read for her and to pray for her. So then they asked the rabbi, what was the merit of this woman that she... What was her merit that Hashem made her funeral be full of people from the yeshiva? So he said that he knew her from the Holocaust. They're both Holocaust survivors. He knew her. And she, even though she wasn't religious, every time she saw a body in Auschwitz, she used to take a shovel quickly and start burying a hole in the ground, a woman, a young woman. She was making a grave, buried a person, and covered her. What did Hashem do for her? Measure for measure. You took care of the bodies. When you become a body, everybody comes to pay you requests, their respect. There was a different funeral. In the middle of the funeral, the rabbi from Chevrat Kadisha realized there's not that many people, but there is hundreds of birds came and sat on the grave of that woman. Hundreds of graves. And the son was like, the rabbi looks at him, he sees the son is in shock. Whenever you see a funeral, in the middle of the funeral, hundreds or maybe thousands of birds are falling on a grave. Like this, around, everywhere. It's very very strange. So the rabbi asked the son, what is all this with all these birds? He said, this is all the birds my mother used to feed for 30 years every day. They come to pay respect to my mother. She was making sure to put on the deck, on the back, a lot of bread and things for the birds every day. The birds didn't... The birds came to pay respect. Think about it. The birds. All the birds know. It's very strange. Anyway, so... The Gemara continues. The Gemara says... that the children of Haman, grandchildren of Haman, are learning Torah in the city of Bnei Brak. I don't know if it's the Bnei Brak we have today with 80% humidity and lots of bus smokes. I don't know. But it used to be a place called Bnei Brak, and the children of Haman used to learn Torah there. How can it be? How can it be that a person that was like Hitler and had a plan like Hitler, his grandchildren had the merit to convert and to become yeshiva bachurs? What is it? The Gemara also continue, Bnei Banav shel Sisra limdu tinokot b'Yerushalayim. The grandchildren of Sisra, another wicked king, they taught Torah in yeshiva for kids. They became rabbis. The grandchildren of Sancheriv that made a revolution in the whole world, not only against the Jews, and the whole world taught Torah to the public. Who are they? Shmaya and Avtalion, two of the greatest rabbis ever lived. Shmaya and Avtalion. Why the children of Haman had the merit to learn Torah? Who knows? Very good. The Torah said, even if you mean bad, and something good came out of it to the nation of Israel, you meant bad. But great thing happened, your grandchildren will benefit from it. You get your punishment for your bad intention. But the good thing after all came, all the nation of Israel anonymously, right? No, not anonymously, unanimously, they became religious. They all made tshuva. They came, they stood in Shushan, fasting, they put ashes on their head, they wore a sack, everyone was crying, praying, all the children from the yeshivot. It was a great event. The Jews became so close to Hashem. Hashem said, thanks to you, Haman, look what happened to my nation. So your grandchildren will have the merit to become Jews and to learn Torah in the city of Bnei Brak in the future. Okay, now the last thing for tonight, and I have another minute. 400 children were taken by the Romans to Rome in a boat. They're going to prison. They realize right away why they take us. We teenage. Why they take us? To work in prostitution. That's what they do. Even today, there's millions of prostitutes that are forced to be prostitutes. They kidnap them from Ukraine, from Russia. They put an ad, you make $1,000 in Israel cleaning houses. So, $1,000 in Russia, it's better than what the president makes almost. It's a lot of money there. They come to Israel, as soon as they get to the airport, there's some kind of a gangster, a head of a gang. It's in America, everywhere, in Europe. They put them in a house, they tell them, this is your room, tomorrow we're going to get you to the job. They lock her in, and that's it. They make her now. It could be a mother to children. She came only for a few more months to work. She has a husband and children. Now she's in Austria, in Germany, in France, in Israel, in the United States. Nobody ever find her. That's it. They made her a slave. And all day they bring people over there until they destroy her mentally, physically. That's what they do. So that, it's nothing new. This, in the time of the Gemara, that's what the Romans are about to do to 400 Jewish children. And teenagers. They realized where they're heading to. So they said, they started to ask one from each other. They all knew Torah. They want to know the law. They said, if we all jump into the water and commit suicide to prevent that tragedy from happening, do we ever share to the world to come? What's the question? The question is, if a person commits suicide, most of the committing suicide ended up with no share to the world to come, with some exception to the rule. One of the exceptions to the rule, if a person had a mental problem, he was taking medication, he wasn't unconscious, or things like this, then you cannot hold him guilty. Or if a person knew that by him dying or falling in the hand of the goyim, they will force thousands of Jews to pay and to become, to come to release him and pay millions, and they won't be able to do it, and it's going to create a lot of problems, so he sacrificed his life to save thousands of Jews. That's not a committing suicide. That's giving my life to save 100, to save 1,000 of other Jews. You cannot say that a person like that hero soldier, Klein, Roy Klein, He saw a granite they threw next to all his soldiers. He was the head of the unit. He saw the granite. It was 3 seconds to explode and kill everyone. He jumped on the bomb with his stomach and explode to thousands of pieces and save all his soldiers. And he was a religious, big Kiddush Hashem. Until today, people in Israel, he became a hero. Why? Literally, and he was a married man with the children. He jumped on the bomb that the Arab threw and gave his life to save all his soldiers. Imagine the life of this soldier knowing they're living thanks to their commander that jumped on this. So this kind of committing suicide, it's a different story. You cannot say, hey, this guy's wicked, he killed himself. Who gave you permission to take your life away? God give you life and you take it away? So now the children thinking, to protect ourselves from falling in the hand of the goyim to prostitution, we allowed to get killed, or we have to take the decree and do it, hoping that Hashem would save us? They don't know now. So, darash laim agadol shebaem. There was one older, maybe 18, he was a Talmid Chacham, he knew a lot of Torah. He told them, Amar Hashem mibashan ashiv mimtzulot yam. There is a verse about us, that Hashem will get us from the bottom of the ocean to Him. What does it mean? People like us that jump to the bottom of the ocean, Hashem will bring us up to the afterlife. When all the girls heard that, right away they jumped into the middle of the ocean. The boys say, it's needless to say, if the girls jumped, when a boy, if they tell you to sleep with a woman, if not we kill you, you have to die. A girl is a different story. Why? Because the girl's not really doing anything. She lay down like a statue. She doesn't have to participate in a scene. She's forced. It's forcing yourself on her. But a man, he cannot do it. He has to act. He cannot stand like a statue and make a scene. It's not going to work. So if the women that could only stand like this and say to God, I didn't want it, it was the worst day of my life, and if it was up to me, you saw I didn't even move. I didn't want to cooperate. But they also killed themselves. Us, the men, that we have to cooperate with the scene, we're not going to jump in. Right away, they jump into the ocean. All 400 of them died. Rabbi Yehuda says, you know, obviously, these children went express to heaven. And Rabbi Yehuda speaking about Hannah and her 7 sons, that they put them in front of the Caesar, and he put a statue, and he wanted them to bow down in front of a stadium full of people. And they disagree, and he chopped their heads of all 6 of them. When the youngest guy, he left, he told him, listen, don't make me kill the last boy of your mother's family. I want to leave you to your mother. I'm going to throw my ring on the floor, and you pretend you're picking up my ring. It would look to the audience that you bow down to the idol. You, in your mind, have intention to pick up my ring, not to bow down to my idol. Nobody will see from far away, and like this I let you go. So he said to him, hey, you think you're scaring me with chopping my head? You're doing us a favor. We'll never sell our God to this idol. And then obviously he said, Shema Israel, and he killed the last one. So this is the Shiva, Chana and Shivat Banea, they buried next to the Ari HaKadosh in Tzfat. You have the graves over there, Chana and Shivat Banea. So, obviously, we're done, I think, for today. We covered this page. Let me see if there's anything I left out. It says like, it says like this. Chana said to Hashem, Avraham, your son, gave one of his son. Was willing to give one son. I gave 7. Don't ever forget that. She went up to the roof. She jumped and she died with her children. When the Gemara say, Atzta bat kol, an echo in heaven will sound. Emma banim smecha. The mother of the son now happy. Why? Up to now, she was suffering. Now she's expressed to heaven. Her suffering is over. And the fun, the real fun, begins. We'll see you, Bezrat Hashem. Next Wednesday, the lecture will be on 9, not 8:30. Summertime, it's easier to do it on 9. On Monday, it's 8:30. For now, it's 8:30. Still until fair, because I have 2 lectures that night. I don't have room to start it at 9. So Monday, it's 8:30. Thank you very much.